Okay. Welcome, everyone, again to the Healing Story Alliance teleconference with Matt Hopwood. I'm so excited about this. Many months ago, every day I get something called the Daily Good on my email, and this particular day it had something very compelling which said a human love story. So, of course, I clicked on and I read all about Matt and his amazing journey across the UK, collecting love stories of all kinds, helping others to share, and discovery of how love stories can be so transformational for community and as well as individuals. So I called up on the weird chance that he might be able to join us, and he said he would, and I'm so excited. Since then, he has been walking across Scotland as well, so there is more to his story. And I am just so happy to welcome you, Matt. And he's also, we should say, he's it's 2 in the morning there, so he's being very quiet not to wake up his family.
So yeah.
He has a heavy heart, as do we all, in the recent events. So welcome to you, Matt, and share, and when you're ready to have us join in, just let us know, okay?
Yes, I will do. Thank you. And it's just wonderful to be welcomed and to be connected with you, and it feels a great blessing for me to be able to share my thoughts and share the work and to hear your thoughts as part of that. So thank you. Thanks a lot. I think I'll start by maybe telling you a little about my work, A Human Love Story, and then I'd love to share some love stories I've gathered along the way and I've shared with people. And then I think it might be a good thing to share my own love story with you as well, and then perhaps we can all talk and share the things that have resonated with us. So I passionately and sort of fervently believe that love stories can change the world, can be positive actors for change in the world. And over the last 5 years, I've walked thousands of miles throughout the UK, and I've journeyed and conversed with people across the world in exploring that idea and in sharing love stories with people in all sorts of different situations. I recently completed a 500-mile odd walk throughout Scotland, and I was meeting with local people on the path, and local people in the towns and in the villages, and wherever that kind of serendipity came across, and exploring what love is to them and what their experiences of love are, and their experiences of connection. And on these journeys and on my walks, I seek hospitality along the way. So I carry a very sort of small bag and a staff, and I journey out, and part of that journey is coming into communities gently as a stranger and seeing how they welcome and seeing how the communities express that notion of communal love. And for me, I guess, the root of a human love story, it's all about providing a safe space for anyone and for everyone to be deeply heard and to tell the stories of who they are and how they feel and how they've experienced life and experienced connection and experienced love. And for me, that is and becomes a sacred space and a sacred place. Because essentially what I do with my work is to provide a space where people can open out and can allow themselves to be vulnerable, and through that allow themselves to share deeply and to give something that's of themselves and something true. And for me, it becomes this sacred place because of two key things, which is you're allowing a person to share, but the other side of that is you are listening deeply, you're paying attention, and within that there is the space in between you. So on all these occasions where I've met people and where I've sat with people and where I've met with groups and shared with groups, amazing things happen when you share your love stories, because not only are you sharing moments in your life that are perhaps profound, or perhaps they have shaped who you are, the fabric of who you are, but not only is it that, but the very act of sharing is in itself a love story. To pay attention deeply is to be compassionate, is to show understanding. So not only do you share love stories, you recreate and build love stories as you go along, and then these permeate into the world like a ripple effect, and the love spreads. So it's the most amazing and wonderful and challenging work, and it's just really lovely to be here with you and to share and to talk about it. I get asked a lot, or I have to explain a lot, what love stories are, particularly in England. If you talk to English people you say, I'm here to share love stories or to talk to you about what your love stories are, most people will be very shy and very demure, and they won't think they have a story that is worth sharing, and they'll quite often be quite embarrassed about that. But for me, love stories, they're essentially our life stories. They're our experiences of connection. And that might be deeply with ourselves, an unveiling, you know, a spiritual, sacred experience. It might be with other people, in partnerships or in groups or in communities, or it may be in relation to the land or to the cosmos, or to everything wherein we can find connection, and what every level. And love stories, in my experiences meeting people, encompass every single emotion you can imagine. And in a way, I would say probably 80% of love stories that I've heard have had some deep sadness to them. You know, they can be joyful, they can be bittersweet, they can be joyous, they can be raucous, they can be all of these things. But I think because love asks us to open and to be vulnerable, so the extremity of that experience brings in also the opposite experience and the opportunity for sadness and loss and all of those things. And I guess the other thing about love stories is they change. You know, my love story of today is not the same as my love story yesterday or my love story tomorrow. They meet us where we are in the world and how we are responding to the world and to each other and to people. So they are infinitely human. And I think that's the wonder of asking people to engage in their love stories, because it's something they can comprehend, but it's challenging for them to express and for them to connect with. And really, love stories, they come in all forms. I'd love to share some stories with you now I've heard on my journey. And these stories have come from the deepest sort of south of England to the furthest north in Scotland. I've been speaking to people in Australia and Bulgaria and America and Canada, and all of these stories, they have common threads, but they are infinitely different. And some can span 70 years of romance, and some can just express mere sort of flickers and moments. And today I was I experienced a beautiful love story. I went to a funeral of a friend and a village elder locally here in Sussex in England. And what was really interesting for me is during the funeral, people talked, and during the address, people talked about his achievements. They touched on his achievements, which were actually great. But what was spoken more of were his interactions with people, little acts of love within the community, how he'd touched someone here, helped someone here, given time, given space, little acts of love. And this big love story that encompassed this person was also made up of all these tiny love stories, you know, that made up his experience with others. And I often find that's the same in graveyards. They are places of a myriad of love stories. But when you look on gravestones, you very rarely see something like, here is Bob. Bob was a successful entrepreneur. Bob made this, Bob made that. What it says is Bob was loved. It says in loving memory. And it says Bob was a father or a mother. And all those little epitaphs, for me, are love stories. You know, they're a distillation of words to encompass an experience. The very first love story I ever heard, I was walking. It was the first walk I'd ever gone on. I was an absolute mess, because I just decided I was going to do this thing, and then I walked out the front door with a bag and a guitar. I didn't know what I was doing. I was sort of wandering along. I didn't know where I was staying. I had my phone in my pocket that kept beeping with people saying good luck, and I didn't want to answer them. I was in a mess, and I got to this hill overlooking Sussex in the south here, and I met this guy who was with his dog. And we got to talking, and I explained to him what I did, and he said, well, you know, he said, this is my love story. He said, walking with my dog. He goes, because every day I walk exactly the same route, and I walk this route so I can remember my partner who passed away, and it's the only way I can remember her. So we come here, and we walk the same route, and we remember the love, and we re-inhabit that love. And that was his love story, and that was the first love story I ever heard. I did a project in a prison maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, and I met with some inmates, and there was 8 or 9 of them, and all of them had committed Category A crimes. They were all there for murder, but they'd been in prison for a long time. And I was quite nervous about meeting these people and about talking about love. It felt very soft, I suppose, and gentle, and I didn't know what would occur. But, you know, I was sat next to this huge guy with tattoos all over him, you know, the archetypal prisoner, and he just fixed me with a stare. And he said, you know, my love story is him. And he pointed to the guy next to him. He said, because he looks at me in the morning, and he opens the door for me, and he is with me in the day. And so that was his love story. And I often think perhaps the smallest and the most beautiful love story is a smile. You know, I often walk down roads and highways, and I check in and I look at the cars going by or the people going, and I really look at people and I see how they respond, and I smile and I see if they smile back, because there's a power in a smile, because essentially you're saying, I see you and I acknowledge you exist. It's an expression of societal, of communal connection and of love. And in Africa there are many tribes and many peoples who when they offer a greeting, the translation is, they're saying, I see you, I can see you. And for me, a smile is the most perfectly beautiful, rounded love story for that reason. And as I said, all these love stories, they're so infinite. I worked with a group of maybe 20 young people who were refugees, mostly from Somalia. I was working with them last year in London. And it took maybe 2 months to develop relationships and to build that place where people could be a little vulnerable. And it came to the last few days and meeting with them and beginning to record their stories and talk to them. And without exception, every single one of those young people expressed love as welcome, as feeling like they had home, and home was part of love and belonging to something. So that was how love manifested itself for them. You know, and in romantic senses, when I meet people, they say home is something that gets repeated often. It is a feeling that people experience when they feel loved. They feel something, they can't describe it, but it's a sense of coming home, of, I think, being alongside something or someone else that makes them feel deeply at home. And I guess maybe just the last experience of a love story I'd like to share with you before maybe I go on to talk about my own is, I'd like to talk about self-love, which is something that repeats again and again and again and again. I met a lady in Middle England, right slap bang in the centre of England, as you could possibly imagine. And she'd heard I was coming. She'd come out to meet me. She offered me food. She offered me a bed for the night. She gave me waterproof trousers for the next day. Mm-hmm. All of these wonderful things. And as we sat to dinner, we got to talking, and I noticed there wasn't a picture anywhere in the house, not a single image. And I mentioned it sort of casually, and she said, no, there's no image, I can't have a photo of myself. She said, my mum has been trying for 8 years for me to give her a photo, but I can't bear to look at myself. And the lack of self-love that that lady had for herself, or the ability to love herself, you know, was so deep that she couldn't even have an image of herself. And I think this again is another theme that repeats as I walk and I meet people, because the pressure of the society and community, of the things that you need to be something of value, to be something that's worthy of love, is so weighty that many people think they aren't worthy of it, and in that action they close down. And that's where another power, I think, of being given the space to share your story and your love story comes from, because for some people it's the first acknowledgement of self, it's the first opening, the first roots of emerging back into the world. And it's hard for many, many people, and it's a great privilege, and it's really humbling for me to be involved in. So I think I could talk forever for stories, and maybe we could talk a little later, and if there's anything that touches you, we can go over those. But I think I'd just like to spend a few minutes just sharing my love story with you as it finds me today, at 2 a.m. in Brighton on the south coast of England. And I offer it to you as truthfully and as openly as I can from my heart. I think ever since I was a child, I've struggled to communicate anything that had any depth of feeling or emotion. I was brought up by a wonderful, beautiful family who were infinitely caring, but we didn't have a language to articulate emotion. We didn't speak deeply or profoundly really about anything. Not because we didn't care, but because I don't think perhaps they even knew how to express themselves in that way, coming down from their parents. So I grew up in a home of love, but in a home where I didn't have any means of talking about how I felt. And those experiences followed with me through my life until I got to the point when I was 33, I'm 41 now, but when I was 33, when I had, I guess, a crisis, I was so far from my soul, or from what the essence of me was, I felt so far from that, that I, in an old-fashioned phrase here in England, I took to my bed, you know, and I was ill, as in I was ill, but I was also ill inside, so removed from who I was, the essence of my identity. And I didn't feel I belonged anywhere. I'd never felt I belonged anywhere. But in that same year, I met a woman and a person who I'd only met once before. And I met her when I was 21, and I was in a band, and I was gigging, and I performed loads of gigs, and I was at one gig in London. And I remember being incredibly drunk, but looking out across the crowd and seeing at the back someone and some eyes looking at me. And I remember seeing that and recognizing in that moment something or someone that was so essentially me, that I felt like I knew at that moment that that person was someone I needed, and that they needed me. But that was 12 years before, and that night I went back to my cousin's house, who lived nearby the gig, and she was there as well, and I spent 2 hours trying to chat her up, and it didn't work at all. She completely ignored me, and in the end she went to bed, she went to sleep, and I sort of wandered off thinking, okay, you know. But I'd always told my cousin that of this experience. And when I was 33, I went to my cousin's wedding, and there was this woman, you know, this same woman. And because my cousin had known this, she sat us next to each other at this wedding, and I couldn't talk. I couldn't say anything, and all my family were sort of looking over their shoulders, and they're all incredibly anxious in many ways, my family. They have anxiety. And it sort of builds that feeling of anxiety, and I couldn't talk to her, I couldn't connect. And at one point we were by the bar, and she almost held me by the shoulders, and she said, "Why can't you say anything? What's the matter with you?" And you know, I almost felt for the first time in my life I was going to say what I felt. And just as I opened my mouth to speak, my brother-in-law or someone in my family, they sort of cut across and cut in the space. But what I did manage to do was to get her number and to get her contact details. And as I lay in bed having a crisis and falling apart and hurting a lot, actually, I connected with her. I sent her a text and she said, well, look, I'm in France. Come to France. Just come. And I made every excuse under the sun not to go. Till in the end, I guess there was no excuse left. And I went. And I borrowed 50 quid off my sister. And I borrowed a car off my mum. And I journeyed to France. And as I went, I got slower and slower and slower. Because I think I knew deep down that I was going somewhere where I had to let something go in order to begin healing, to begin to be able to come home to myself, in a way. But in the end, I turned up, and there she was, standing on the doorstep in this crazy outfit. And I sort of stepped out of the car, and I was sort of smiling, and she said, well, you said a week ago that we should get dressed up, so I've dressed up. And she was in this amazing outfit, and I just sort of said this flippantly, because I said things flippantly, because I didn't really know what I was saying in those days. But I stayed there for a week, and as I was there, I stopped looking at myself in the mirror, and I stopped washing, and I stopped all these things, and I guess I just let myself hurt, and I let myself be looked after, and I let go. I think probably for the first time since I was a little baby, all the things that were tight inside, and I let go. And I let myself be looked after. And at the end of the week, I remember walking out the door and saying goodbye, and we had this sort of hug, and I was incredibly tight. And I just got in the car and I drove off from this place where I found something. But I drove off and I cried all the way home, and I cried on the ferry, and I cried when I got home. And I was living in a caravan at the time at the foot of the South Downs here in Sussex. And I waited, and then I guess 3 days later, in the middle of the night, much like tonight, I just picked up the phone and called her, and I said, probably the first true thing I'd ever said, and I said, I love you. And she said, well, if you love me, come and get me. And I did. And I drove up and I picked her up and I brought her back to my caravan. And that was the beginning of everything. In a way, it felt like a rebirth. And within a week, she was moving in her spice collection and her mattress and all these sorts of things. And within 9 weeks, we were engaged. And within 3 months, we were married. And then we began my journey and dealt with all the difficult stuff, you know. But that is my love story, or the first part of it, or the second part, or whatever part of it is. But that's how it is tonight, telling you and speaking to you here. So that's my sharing, and thank you for listening to that. And I guess
thank you.
Oh my god, thank you so much.
Oh, Matt, that's beautiful. It's that is that kind of story that gives permission to be who we are.
Yeah, I think when I first started, the idea was to share love stories, but I think even then, in those days, I was so nervous about talking. I mean, I do this all the time, but it's the worst thing I could possibly do. I find it terribly hard to say anything that's real, and so in a sense it's my constant reawakening, constant challenge for me. But I think it's important that I have to offer, because I think permission is exactly the right word. I think it's the balance of the sharing, you know, that I have to offer something of myself. I can't just expect people to open up and be vulnerable too. So we search for that experience, that equality of connection, you know, and communion in a way.
Exactly. Hmm. Well, would people like to unmute now and share your thoughts, your stories, ask questions?
Yes, please do. If anyone has any questions or thoughts or anything they'd like to share, everything and anything is really valuable. And in the same way, nothing. If there's nothing, that's really valuable too.
It's just wonderful, wonderful, Matt. This is Helena, and I just have been smiling the whole time, just being with you in that way. And the connection is just so powerful. I'd just like to share something little when you talked about just how in one moment it can be just that being seen, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And I just remember one time walking along the street. It was a difficult time in my life, and I was just, I don't know where I was as I was walking down the street feeling, I don't know, lost, alone, whatever it was. And I remember so perfectly a mailman came by, and he just said, "It can't be that bad." And I answered, "Well, just sometimes it really feels that way." But I treasure that moment, and I felt that love connection. It was just somebody to just see and to reach out in the way he did, you know. And in other words, that was just a little love story, and you point to the little ones so beautifully, and the big ones too. So just thank you so much for your work.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Lovely.
That story. Thank you. That's wonderful.
Matt, this is Mike. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly.
As you know, it is very beautiful what you've shared, and all the way through, it was like a series of one generous thing after another, and reminded of so many moments. You know, I'm just remembering a sad moment when I had left the bed where somebody was angry at me and walked down the river and could hear a jazz trumpet playing off in the distance, and walked towards it and got to where that trumpeter was just putting away his horn as I was passing. And it was, you know, and I just said to him, "That was so beautiful. Thank you for being there. To hear it a mile away down the river." And I didn't stop walking, I kept going. And he yelled after me, "Hey." And I turned around, and he raised his fist in the air and said, "Thanks." There was nothing more to say. That was a magic moment. Gave me the chance to go back and deal with what was going on at home.
Yeah. That's an amazing love story going both ways, right? Because I've been a musician, and I know what it's like to try and share something of, you know, of your experience, and to meet, you know, a cold face or no expression or something time and time again. I've been in empty places with no one there even. So to be thanked is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful sharing, you know, of compassion and acknowledgement. And it's that thing I was saying about attention, you know, listen, the word listen comes from attendre. It's to pay attention deeply, is to listen, you know. And I think if I constantly think, if all I can do in life is listen and try and listen as deeply as I can, then that's, you know, that's a life worth trying to, that's an endeavor mm-hmm. worth trying to achieve, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Cheryl from Alabama. No, not from Alabama, from Atlanta. and thank you so much. Your stories were just beautiful. A couple things come to mind for me. One is a couple of certifications that I've gotten recently. One with Brené Brown, who talks about vulnerability and shame. And a lot of what she said to me just reminded me of some things that I've learned and maybe some ways that I can be with that work. Also, the reminder that there's a reciprocal relationship between storytelling and story listening, and that the story is shaped by the listener. Just kind of reminded of those two things just by some of what you said. And then around the topic of love, what comes up for me as a Black woman in America is that there are so many of my sisters, me included, and my sisters who feel almost a sense of hopelessness around love because of mass incarceration of Black men, like, and those are some of the men that we happen to love, and they're and there's almost a pretending to be tough and strong and not need love, and just it almost seems easier to pretend to not want to be, you know, to not want love or to not need love than to come to grips with some possibility that that type of love, not the love of our children or the love of our sisters and cousins and aunts and uncles, but that kind of romantic love might not be forthcoming. Sometimes it's hard to reckon with that possibility, so there is almost a phoniness and an inauthentic way of being to just be tough.
Yeah.
You know, and just wonder, you know, if you could share anything with me that might be useful.
Yeah, I don't know, but I can tell you, it reminds me of two things. Firstly, when I was in Scotland just recently, I was in an area called Govan. And Govan sits on the south side of the Clyde, which is the river that flows through and out of Glasgow and out to the sea. And Govan is one of the poorest areas in Europe. It was a great shipbuilding area, but with the decline in the steel industry there, it just became impoverished, and there is a lot of drug abuse there, and a lot of alcoholism, and a lot of social care problems just on every level you can positively imagine. But there is a place in the middle of Govan called Galgale, and it is a place that gives people a sixth or a seventh or an eighth chance in life. And what they do is they take people in and they help them to gain carpentry skills. And on one level it's really practical, but it works on a spiritual and on a cosmological level too, because what they do is they help them to build a boat. And this boat not only is something practical, but it has a totemic effect. And when they finish building this boat, they take it down and they sail it. They go on a journey, and so they move in life physically and mentally. But what I was thinking of for you is that when I turned up there, they were having this big debate about what their project was and what it meant and what life was like, and so many of them had such facades up They were so tough because they had to be, because they were hurt. And love was mentioned as a key part of the work that they did there. And as I turned up, there was a debate raging about this, the idea that love could possibly be part of their work because it was too soft and it was too fluffy and it was too difficult in that way. It wasn't valuable. And the discussion came round to the point that essentially love is and has to now be seen as the hardest endeavor or the hardest pursuit you can engage in your life, but the most valuable. You know, it isn't something that's soft. It isn't something. It is the most challenging thing to do. You have to be tough to love, you know. And that's the truth that they were coming to terms with and to agree with. And it just made me think of that when you were saying that.
Yeah, thank you. That's helpful. Thank you.
It's okay. Thank you. Thanks. Oh, I would say one other thing as well, sorry, about what you, when you mentioned about the relationship between the storyteller and the story listener. I just think it's so powerful, the space that lies between as well, as like a third component. So you have the ability to listen deeply, the ability to open up and be vulnerable, to be brave, you know, but with that lies the ability to hold space and just be with it wherever it goes, and that's okay for both people. And when that really works, that's for me when the story is not really a story, it's just a deep sharing on every level.
When you, I have another question. When you met your love the first time before you went back to the to the wedding, did you dream of her?
That's a really good question. She did come into my dreams because I think I've known her all my life. There's an amazing Greek myth, yeah, I suspect you might know it, but that there were these creatures that roamed the earth that had four arms and four legs and two heads, and they were so powerful that as you sent thunderbolts to split them in half and to scatter them across the world. But every so often these beings join together again, they come back together, you know. And for me, that's how it felt. It was beyond time. It was something other. It was, if you believe in incarnation or past lives, whatever you connect with, whatever terms you give it, whatever the words you use, for me it was that expansive and it was that deep. I just knew. And so she did. She was in my conscious and always had been.
Nice. And when she said, come back and get me, she was already in love with you too.
Yeah, I mean, I would say we've always been in love. and you know, it is that recognition thing, to recognize some, to see, for me anyway, it feels like to see the essential of someone. And for someone to see it in you too, and that feels like love to me, you know, in my experience with her. But you know, the next day I said yeah, and she said come and get me. I said yeah, I'll come and get you. But I was so poor again, I had to go and borrow some more money. It's a terrible start. It wasn't that impressive.
I wonder, Matt, if you encountered people telling stories about real unexpected love. I've had a couple times in my life where I have literally felt like I have fallen in love with someone who is not at all in the context of lover, but for instance, when I was working in my early 20s at a nursing home, I literally fell in love with an older woman that I was taking care of, so much that I couldn't stop thinking about her. I just wanted to be with her, and I wanted to take, you know, go home and build a handicap ramp and have her come live with us. And, you know, I was in love, and it was only a few weeks of, you know, getting to know her and being close with her. And I went back in one morning to, couldn't wait to work with her, and was told that she was dying. And I've always thought, and I was able to go, even though I wasn't supposed to work with her that day, I was able to be with her when she died. And I've always just thought that was a gift, you know, for both of us. Just because the love was so compelling. It was just really weird. But did you ever hear stories like that of unexpected?
I think many stories like that, many people I've spoken to, when they experience love, it's completely unexpected. Because I think for many people, from the stories they've told anyway, they build an expectation of what they imagine love to be, and therefore the person they imagine to feel that huge thing that they imagine love to be. And then it comes in so many different ways.
Right.
And ways like you've just said, you know, and so many people in the same breath have experienced the love that maybe I'm experiencing with my wife or this guy who I went to this funeral today experienced over 70 years with his wife. They experience it in a week. They experience it in a night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A connection that I think is so soul-based, that is so layered, that is so resonating with them and with it, that it's perfect. Mm. It's perfect for what it had to be for that moment, for whatever journey they were on, and even if it didn't feel like it at the time. Does that make sense, at least?
Yeah, I like what you said about how we expect it to look a certain way.
Mm. Yeah.
So, when it manages through in other situations, feel very unusual. It's grace, I think.
And I think it's also about, you know, I think we all, at least for me, you know, life and my project is a journey. And, you know, you can only meet certain people at certain times. You know, I met Pet when I was 21. At the gig, sorry, Petra is my wife. I met her at this gig, you know, and she says to me regularly, you know, if we'd actually connected then, she would have eaten me alive. She said it would, you know, she would have destroyed me because of what she was and where she was, you know, and the people are there. And I think this is the other thing about listening, and where love can perhaps transcend onto a more conscious or metaphysical plane, is that it's about being able to hear yourself and hear who you are and your needs, and see the opportunities where they are, and be able to be in the space to be able to connect with them. And the first point of that is recognition, you know. So when sorry, I can't remember everyone's names, but when you were talking about the black community and this sort of the difficulty, you know, with that sort of with what's going on there, you know, the first part of that battle is to recognise it, mm-hmm. because then the journey is opening out, to be able to be open to healing and to change, you know. And love is essentially is that is the move, is the mover in that, you know. So yeah.
I wonder if you could say just a little bit about how you might begin one of these sessions, whether it's in prison or with refugees or just in a town.
Always for me, it always really works if I'm in the moment, if I'm not trying to be Matt Hopwood who does a human love story and is trying to meet people. When I'm trying to be like that, it never works. But if I can just try and actually just be with people, you know, as they come in, and really see people and acknowledge them and create a space. And that might be on a pathway, sitting on a, you know, sitting on a bench or by the canal, or it might be on top of a mountain, it might be in a pub, it might be in prison, you know. But I think essentially, I think it's so rare for people to have an opportunity to be heard and to be given permission to talk about who they are, that actually if you can do it authentically, with as much love as you can muster, then the right things seem to happen. So I spend all of my time trying to put myself in the right attitude, if you know what I mean, to be in my body and to be conscious and to be present, and I trust that the rest will work out, which usually it does, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I was just going to say, does the call finish at 3? Do we have 1 minute left? Is that where we are?
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to quickly say, if I can do this in 1 minute, that for me, love stories are so important, because I think all over the world and in the UK, and I know in the US and beyond, that the discourse in the media and in the public realm is so often dominated by narratives of fear and of conflict and of division. And I think now more than ever, it's important to explore and express and find ways of voicing alternative things, and to revision the narratives so that we can center it on love and compassion. You know, you can talk about the Manchester bombing as one single act of fear and disconnection, and yet at the same time, and from that one act, there's been tens of thousands of acts of great beauty and of great love.
Right.
Yes. That have come from that, and now you can choose which narratives you want to follow from that. But for me, you know, in my little corner, part of what I want to do is to chip away and do my thing and bring more narratives and more stories of love into the world.
Beautiful.
Can I quote you something that you said, Matt? This wonderful line, and I may have changed it in my mind, but you said, in loving narratives, there is no I or you, only we.
Did I say that? If you can say I said it. Of course you can. Yeah, absolutely.
I just think that's the beauty of what you're trying to speak about.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for staying up to share with us, and I hope there'll be more. I'm hoping that you will come over here. And
well, I'm really hoping to. So invite me, and I'll come. I would love to. I feel a great calling to come. So if there's any opportunities, it would be really great. Yeah.
Good. Well, I'll try to get people to listen to this who are in a higher And
truly, if you're coming, this is Allison Cox, put out word on the Healing Story listserv. It's free to be on it.
Right.
And let us know where you might land, and people can let you know who's got a place to stay.
sounds like a great idea. Yeah, I'll do that.
All of us would be more than happy to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Mm.
So, take good care of yourself.
You too.
And hopefully we'll see you in not too long.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Lovely
thank you.
To talk.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.